I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Jared Kushner has so many jobs at the White House that he's been called the Secretary of Everything. Negotiate a Middle East peace deal, solve the opioid epidemic, reform the criminal justice system, reinvent government, fix the country's ailing infrastructure, work on diplomacy with Mexico and China. Well, that may all be called into question after his security clearance was downgraded last week, meaning he has lost access to top secret information. And now there are questions about whether Kushner is using his connection to President Trump to help the Kushner Companies, the family real estate business started by his father that Jared Kushner used to run. The business has been looking for financing for some of its properties, including one at 666 Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. Its $1.2 billion debt comes due next February. This is a tangled story and an important one as the Mueller investigation into the 2016 presidential campaign continues. We asked Andrea Bernstein. Sorry, I lost my way there. We asked Andrea Bernstein to join us, and she's senior editor for politics and policy at WNYC News in New York. She's co-host of the podcast Trump Incorporated, which is a collaboration between ProPublica and WNYC, tracing the Trump family's conflicts of interest. She joined us by Skype. Andrea Bernstein, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It is such a thrill to be on WHYY. I grew up listening to WHYY for real.
Excellent. Well, we're happy to have you here. And we should say the WNYC, our sister station up there in New York. Also with us is Andrew Prokop, and he's a politics reporter for Vox. Andrew, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
You're very welcome. Let me just make sure our listeners can join us. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Well, where to start? But let me start with the most recent news, which is Kushner losing his security clearance. And Andrew, if I can start with you, do we know why his security clearance was downgraded last week?
We don't know for sure.
I'm sorry.
I have an Andrew and an Andrea. So but let me start with Andrew, and then Andrea will get you in. Go ahead, Andrew.
Sure. So I don't think we know for sure. It's been held up for a very long time, and there are several potential reasons, several different discussions that Kushner had with foreign officials or foreign businesses, potential investors that were not properly disclosed initially. There's his centrality, apparent centrality in Robert Mueller's investigation as well, that could also be playing into things. But all we know is that for some reason, it's been over a year now, and the FBI is unwilling to sign off on giving Kushner this top secret clearance. And this is just a highly unusual thing for someone in his position, very high up, and he's been operating with this interim clearance for over a year now that allowed him to have top secret information. And, you know, he's such a high-level White House advisor that there's no real reason that the FBI would take such a long time to give him the full clearance and to check out his background, unless they found some things that were pretty troubling to them. So it's still mysterious about what exactly that is.
And Andrea, as we're talking, he is on his way to Mexico to do one of his many jobs there. What do you make of the fact that he's not been able to get this high-level security?
Well, I mean, it is a mystery exactly why. I think that one of the more startling in the cascade of stories that came out in the past week was the one that was in the Washington Post, where U.S. intelligence agencies were reported to have picked up information that four foreign countries, China, Mexico, Israel, and the United Arab Emirates, believed that they could influence Kushner through his complex business arrangements and the financial difficulties that his company is having. So it would seem that one has to do with the other, but of course we don't know exactly. We do know his business is very complex. And what's kind of interesting is he comes from this New York, New Jersey real estate family. And the way New York, New Jersey real estate businesses operate is by being very discreet, by controlling the flow of information about them. And there is something that fundamentally conflicts with that and being a White House official.
Because this is basically a family business. It's privately held. They don't need to disclose things as public companies are required to do, Andrea.
That's exactly right. And, you know, Jared Kushner has divested from some parts of his business, but mostly he's divested to close family members and his White House ethics disclosure forms, the ones that he did file, show that he still has $761 million in assets that he's retaining. So, like his father-in-law, he hasn't cut his ties. And what we are learning is apparently some foreign entities and other people think that this is a way that they can influence what goes on in the White House and in U.S. policy.
I mean, Andrew, it seems as if the investigation Mueller is looking into the business dealings that may be associated with Kushner, but also the Russia investigation. And there certainly were a number of meetings where he was there, and there was a workaround that he wanted to do during the transition period. Are those the sort of two tracks that are being looked at when it comes to Jared Kushner?
Well, there are places where we know.
I'm sorry. And I'm going to do first name, last name. So there's absolutely no confusion here. That goes to you, Andrew Prokop. Go ahead. And then I'll get back to you, Andrea Bernstein. Go ahead, Andrew.
I think that may be one way to think about it. It's also possible that the two tracks could overlap. We know that Kushner met with a Russian banker, Sergei Gorkov, from a state-owned bank in December 2016. He says that they didn't really discuss any specific business investments, but the banker says that this was a business meeting. So, you know, those two things could overlap. But I do think that there are several reasons to think that Jared Kushner is an important figure in the Russia investigation that don't relate to his business. He attended the Trump Tower meeting that his brother-in-law, Donald Trump Jr., set up in June 2016 at the height of the presidential campaign with Paul Manafort. The Trump delegation there was Kushner, Manafort, and Trump Jr. And he also oversaw the Trump campaign's digital operation. And there have been some reports that Mueller's team is looking into that digital operation to see whether anyone involved in it collaborated with Russian cyber operatives, bots who were targeting voters in key areas with propaganda. So there are both of those from during the campaign, and then there are the discussions he had during the transition. Right. He met with the Russian ambassador, Sergei Kislyak, at Trump Tower in a secret meeting with Michael Flynn, didn't disclose that for months. And then, as I mentioned, there was also the Russian banker meeting with Sergei Gorkov. And a lot of these were left off of his disclosure forms that he filed for his security clearance for his background check.
And Andrew Prokop, just a quick follow-up. I know when he was sitting in that meeting in Trump Tower, June 2016, he texted someone to say, essentially, get me out of here. What are we to make of that?
Yeah, well, his defense of this meeting is that it was essentially, he says, a big misunderstanding, that he didn't even really know what was going on. He just dropped by because Don Jr. asked him to, and that he says that he sat in it for 10, 15 minutes and then emailed his assistant, can you please call me on my cell? Need excuse to get out of meeting. So, you know, if that's the case, it is potentially exculpatory for him. Now, you know, there are other potential reasons he could send a message like that. Maybe he thought that the meeting was, you know, a little shady and wanted to not be involved in it. And that was the reason that he wanted to get out of it. But
we don't know.
Yeah.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Andrew Prokop, and he's politics reporter for Vox. Also with us is Andrea Bernstein, senior editor for politics and policy at WNYC News in New York, the public radio station in New York, and co-host of the podcast called Trump Incorporated. And we are talking about the business entanglements and obviously the jobs, the various jobs that Jared Kushner has working at the White House and where they may intersect and where there may be conflicts of interest. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. I do want to play a clip, and this is actually of attorney, U.S. Attorney Chris Christie. And this goes back to 2004. Andrea, you were talking about the Kushner business, this real estate business that began, I guess, largely by the father of Jared Kushner, Charles Kushner, developer, and also a major Democratic donor. This is U.S. Attorney Chris Christie back in 2004 charging Jared Kushner's father, Charles, developer, major Democratic donor.
Mr. Kushner engaged in a conspiracy with co-conspirators to hire prostitutes to entice witnesses who were cooperating with the federal investigation into engaging in sex acts with those prostitutes and to have those sex acts then videotaped.
Andrew, we could spend a whole hour, Andrea Bernstein, on what happened in 2004, but perhaps this helps understand a little bit about what Kushner companies are all about. What happened back then? Do we have Andrea Bernstein?
Jared, this is Charlie Kushner, who's Jared Kushner's father. And Charlie Kushner ran a family real estate business in New Jersey. He inherited it from his parents, and he was in the business with his siblings. And they began to have a dispute about some financial contributions that Charlie Kushner was making to politicians. And so his siblings sued him. They began to cooperate with Chris Christie. When he got onto this, he hired a prostitute to entrap his brother-in-law, and he did actually get this videotape. He sent the videotape to his sister right before a family party. So that is what he ended up pleading guilty to, and he ended up serving jail time for that and tax evasion. So there's been this long time antagonism between Chris Christie, who clearly went on to become New Jersey governor, and the Kushner family. When that happened, Jared Kushner was 23 when his father went to jail, and Jared Kushner ends up taking over the family business at a very young age, and he is the CEO of this business right up until the time that he goes to serve in the White House. In fact, he was negotiating with a lot of foreign investors, not just maybe the Russian investor, which he says it was transition talk, but the Russian investor and Putin, or a spokeswoman for Putin, said it was actually about investments. But there were other ones. There were meetings with China, other countries that then ended up continuing to have negotiations with his family business and with his father, Charlie Kushner. So there's a sort of a through line, if you will, of the cast of characters and what has gone on beginning in New Jersey in the basically at the turn of the century, and going up until right until the present.
Anything that you want to add to that, Andrew Prokop? Sorry, I'm getting first and last names all confused here. Andrew Prokop, do you want to add to that? And I do want to talk about this building at 666 Fifth Avenue that was bought in 2006. And I know that both of you have covered that, but this seems to be this albatross, Andrew Prokop, that is making Jared Kushner and perhaps even the Trump administration look rather questionable.
Yeah, and I would just add to this whole Charles Kushner aspect. I grew up in New Jersey, and I remember when all this was happening at the time, and it was an enormous scandal. Charles Kushner was the biggest Democratic donor in the state of New Jersey, the chief funder for Jim McGreevy, who was the victorious governor candidate in 2001, And this was such a lurid scandal that got so much attention. And what ended up happening is that Charles Kushner pleaded guilty. He went to jail for about a year, and then he got out. Hmm. And he wanted to make a big splash. Jared was the CEO of Kushner Companies, but a lot of people think that Charles was continuing to kind of run things behind the scenes when he got out of prison. And so he basically, you know, the Kushner Companies had a big portfolio of apartments and office buildings in several northeastern states, but they hadn't really made a big splash in New York City yet. So as sort of his big effort to turn the page in 2006 and reestablish his company, moved the headquarters from suburban New Jersey to Fifth Avenue, he offered, or Kushner Companies offered, to pay $1.8 billion for a skyscraper at 666 Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. And it set a record for, it was the highest price ever paid for a single real estate asset in the United States. So this was a very big purchase. And it was financed almost entirely through debt. And the transaction was made pretty close to the peak of the housing bubble. I think the deal went through in early 2007. So since then, this building really has been an albatross. It's been losing money. They've had to sell off pieces of it. And it's been difficult to rent out all of the office space. The Kushners came up with this plan to knock down the tower and to build a more modern one in its place. But they've been really struggling to find the, you know, extremely wealthy investors who would be necessary to fund this project. And the latest is that it looks like this probably won't even end up happening. But
well, you know what? Hold on one there. I know that Andrea Bernstein wants to get in the conversation. Andrea, we have about a minute before our break here, but take us, I guess, up to present day, if it's possible. And we'll talk a bit after the break about some of the loans that came to the Kushner Companies as a result of some meetings in the White House. But where does this building literally stand today?
Well, it's in this very fancy part of Fifth Avenue, right next to Rockefeller Center, across the street from the Rolex watches, down the street from Trump Tower. But it needs money, and it needs money by February 2019. And the kind of people that are interested in investing are people who tend to want to have a low profile, foreign investors, people who want the cachet, maybe not just to make money off of the building. And that is the fundamental contradiction. This is the family business of the White House senior advisor seeking money from a lot of foreign banks, foreign entities, while its former CEO is in the White House.
Well, let's take that short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Andrea Bernstein. She's senior editor for politics and policy at WNYC News, co-host of the podcast Trump Inc. And we are talking also with Andrew Prokop, and he is politics reporter for Vox, walking through some of these business entanglements involving Jared Kushner, of course, has many jobs at the White House, and some of the questions it raises about conflicts of interest. You can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Much more after the short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Andrea Bernstein and Andrew Prokop about Jared Kushner, his responsibilities for country or company, and where they may intersect. Andrea Bernstein, if I can go back to you, and as you say, part of his search has been, or the family's search has been, to find money to help deal with some of the debt that they have, including this building at 666 Fifth Avenue. Tell us what we know or what happened when there was a meeting with Cutter.
Well, what The Intercept reported was that the companies, representatives from the Kushner Companies, met with the Minister of Finance of Cutter at trying to make a financial deal, that the deal didn't happen, and that some months later, Jared Kushner was among the people in the White House who urged a blockade of Cutter. So the implication is that somehow Jared Kushner did something that was retaliatory. Now, we don't know. The White House says absolutely not. It was made on policy decisions. The company says absolutely not. We were making a decision based on, we were making a proposed financial relationship. Jared Kushner had nothing to do with it. The White House had nothing to do with it. But it goes to the fundamental problem here, because you just, it's impossible to know if somebody along the way believes that they can be influencing U.S. policy or somehow getting control over the direction of U.S. policy by dealing with the president's son-in-law. So even if everything is true, if there is complete separation, there's still a fundamental conflict of interest, because we don't know. And we don't know who thinks what along the way. And that's the problem.
Well, let me toss this to you, Andrew Prokop. Then executives from Apollo Global Management and Citigroup met with Jared Kushner at the White House. This was last year. And then a couple months later, lent $184 million and $325 million to Kushner companies. Does that fall under the same questionable behavior that we were just talking about with Qatar?
I think so. It's exactly what Andrea is saying. There's, since he hasn't divested himself fully from his real estate holdings and the parts that he has divested himself from, he's mainly just sold to his family, to family-controlled trusts. It's really impossible to know whether the businesses, the financial institutions, or the foreign investors are trying to influence him by in their dealings with the Kushner companies. And one thing I would add on these particular loans is that Apollo Global Management in particular has some relation to Qatar. And that loan went through a few months after the Qatar blockade. And so there have been some questions raised about whether perhaps the government of Qatar may have felt pressured by how poorly things went for them with the Trump administration that summer and decided to help pony up to the Kushner companies to help try to avoid that situation in the future. Again, this is speculative, and, you know, the evidence isn't there to prove that that's happened, but, you know, there are these enormous questions.
Hmm. There's an email from Paula says, has there been a drop in desire to rent space in Kushner Kushner properties? Andrea Bernstein, I know they're besides 666 in New York, there's another big property at the New York Times building, and they have properties in Baltimore. They have them in other cities as well. Are they paying any kind of price, so to speak, of losing people that want to be associated with these buildings?
I don't think there's evidence that they're losing people who don't want to be associated, which is a different situation from Trump. Right. I mean, we know that, for example, the Trump Soho, there was a sharp fall off in business after Trump started his campaign. And now it is no longer the Trump Soho. They were bought out. With Kushner Companies, however, he does have a vacancy situation in both of these marquee Manhattan properties. One of them is the former New York Times building. And he had, for example, a restaurant from celebrity chef Guy Fieri, which was badly reviewed and didn't do well and has now left. So they have some vacancies. They have vacancies there in their prime space. If you go look at the building, you can see this brown paper on the windows, on the retail space, on the ground floor. So they don't have a big tenant like a bank or a tenant that would stay for years. And so questions have been raised about whether the financing they got from that building was really merited by the tenants that they have. Then on Fifth Avenue, I mean, they had this plan for quite some time, which is really only looks like it's coming apart recently, to raise it. So they were letting tenants leave, which you have to do if sure. you're raising a property. But then that also creates a fundamental vulnerability. I think one of the other thing that I wanted to add to what Andrew was saying was that our systems of disclosure were not designed for people with this kind of complex business life. So Jared Kushner has filled out disclosure forms. He's filled out hundreds and hundreds of limited liability companies, shell companies. But because of the disclosure forms, that's where the trail stops. So he doesn't have to tell us who all the investors are. He doesn't have to tell us all the partners, all of the members of these LLCs. And one shell company can have hundreds of members. So it just shows how difficult it is to square having somebody like this in the White House with, you know, our disclosure system, which is meant to throw sunlight on all of these relationships so the people can understand what is coming into play here.
The idea of putting things into, I guess, stocks and bonds into a blind trust, I think that's something that people can understand. But as you were just saying, Andrea, this is a many-tentacled kind of business, which I assume is what real estate, especially large operations like the Kushner properties and perhaps even Trump as well, that the complexity of these kinds of companies makes it really hard to track down what's going on.
Right, exactly right. And there's a case that's going on right now or in Baltimore where some tenants sued them and the shell company owned by the Kushners tried to move the case to federal court. Presumably they thought they would get a better jury in a wider pool than in just Baltimore. But the judge said, okay, well, to do that, you have to show us who all your partners are and you have to prove that none of them live in Maryland. And they said, well, we don't want to do that publicly. We want to do that privately. Wow. And the judge said, no, you can't. You have to make it disclosed. And they said, okay, we're going to go back to Baltimore. So they abandoned the effort to have what they presumably thought would be a better jury rather than show the partners. So, I mean, this is not an unusual thing for the real estate industry, but it's an unusual thing to have the real estate industry so well represented in the White House.
Let me play something that actually goes back to July of 2017, and this is Jared Kushner speaking. We don't often hear him speaking, but it was at to the press. This was after meeting with the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, and again, addressing some of the questions that have been raised about his behavior.
Let me be very clear. I did not collude with Russia, nor do I know of anyone else in the campaign who did so. I had no improper contacts. I have not relied on Russian funds for my businesses. And I have been fully transparent in providing all requested information.
Now, Andrew Prokop, that was almost a year ago. So this was July of 2017. Can Jared Kushner stand by those words today?
I mean, I think he's still, I don't know, he hasn't been charged with anything yet. There's no proof. There are a lot of meetings that he took, and there are a lot of discussions that he had. And it's definitely true that his disclosure forms of his foreign contacts were laughably incomplete. But the smoking gun of, you know, did he collude with Russia? Did he have some sort of untoward dealings with Russia? That still doesn't really exist. We're in the realm of a lot of questions have been raised, questions that seem like very good and legitimate questions that he hasn't fully answered. But I don't think we've yet seen what would amount to, a truly bombshell revelation that completely changes what we know about this.
And Andrea Bernstein, it's interesting that he supported the firing of James Comey. He pushed for Manafort to be campaign chairman, which he was for a couple of months. He was a supporter of Michael Flynn being the national security advisor. What does that tell us about Jared Kushner?
I mean, I think that each of them tells something separately. Let's just look at Comey. I mean, I think that, we know what happened with Comey. Comey was fired. Trump told the Russians that he was getting the Russia inquiry off his back. And we know that Jared Kushner recommended that from reporting. I mean, I think one other very interesting piece of this, which we haven't really talked about, is that in the Flynn guilty plea, Kushner is referred to, not by name, but as a very high-level transition official. Huh. And the Washington Post identified it as Kushner, and that he had conversations, according to this filing by Mueller, about an attempt to influence a UN vote before Trump was president. So there's a suggestion there that Mueller is sort of keeping an eye on the activities of Kushner. But as Andrew has said, he hasn't been charged with anything. And he says up to this day, he did not collude with the Russians. He did nothing wrong. And there is a perfectly reasonable explanation for all of this.
Let me play something that President Trump said just a week or so ago on February 23rd at a press conference or speaking to the press, speaking about both Jared Kushner and his daughter, Ivanka.
Well, Jared's done an outstanding job. I think he's been treated very unfairly. He's a high-quality person. He works for nothing, just so, you know, nobody ever reports that. But he gets zero. He doesn't get a salary, nor does Ivanka.
Andrew Brokop, I mean, he does work at the pleasure of the president. How much, I guess, is his job secure knowing who his boss is?
Well, this is always the problem with hiring close family members for top positions like this. It's always considered very difficult and awkward to fire somebody who you're going to have to hang out at family gatherings with for the indefinite future. So, you know, there have been sort of conflicting reports of Trump's own views on Jared's situation right now. I believe there's one report that said that Trump has been musing that maybe it would be better if Jared and Ivanka left the White House and went back to New York. But, you know, there are other reports that he's unhappy with his chief of staff, John Kelly, and it's difficult to say exactly where things stand. We know that Trump, you know, Jared is a very high-level advisor to Trump. He's been the one who's outlasted the first crew of people who came in with the Trump administration. Steve Bannon's gone, Reince Priebus is gone, Sean Spicer's gone, Michael Flynn is gone, and Jared has still been there throughout everything. So, you know, with the departure of Hope Hicks, with now the departure of Gary Cohn, there is a lot of turnover, and Trump may not want the added disruption that would come with Kushner's departure. But, of course, you know, the longer he stays, the more questions will arise about his business and, you know, the various scandals that are unfolding. So we'll see what he does.
And Andrea Bernstein, John Kelly was the one who seemed to downgrade Jared Kushner's security clearance so he doesn't have the kind of top security clearance that he had as an interim, I guess, member of the White House. As I understand it, he had access to presidential daily briefs and things like that. Does it make it harder for him to do all his jobs at the White House?
Well, the White House says no. And since it's, you know, hard to know exactly what his job is, it's hard to see through that. I mean, the Kelly downgrading him is a bit of a puzzler, Trump allowing him to do that. We haven't talked a lot today about Jared's wife, Ivanka Trump.
No, we haven't.
But she's obviously an extremely important person to Donald Trump, someone he puts a lot of trust and faith in. And, you know, Jared comes with her. They're a package. So I think that is the conundrum here, is it's not just like a Gary Cohn or a John Kelly or, you know, a somebody else that Trump can say goodbye. It's his family. And we know how both in the Kushner family and in the Trump family, family sort of reigns supreme and family ties reign supreme.
We're almost out of time here, but Andrea, is there any way to know whether the Ivanka or Jared, since we've been spending most of the hour talking about him, has regrets about taking this job at the White House, knowing that now this spotlight is on him?
You know, we have not seen any sign of that. And I think that, you know, Trump also has been subjected to incredible scrutiny, and the way they act, they seem to just be sort of trying to power through this and dismiss these criticisms as something, things that are coming from opponents or people that want to stand in the way of their agenda.
Well, it's a complicated story. I appreciate both of you joining us today in Radio Times. I finally got your name squared away during the hour. Andrea Bernstein, such a pleasure. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
So great. So great to be on WHYY. Thanks a lot. Hope I can come back.
Absolutely. And she's senior editor for politics and policy at WNYC News, co-host of the podcast Trump Inc. And she joined us by Skype. Andrew Prokop, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome. And he's a politics reporter for Vox. And we began our conversation talking with Ben Freeman, director, founder of the Foreign Influence Transparency Initiative at the Center for International Policy. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out much more about this program. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.